Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Monday morning. It is the 3rd of November, a new month, a new mindset. I don't know. We'll find out tomorrow.
Oh.
We'll find
out
tomorrow.
Are you asking us a question?
Yeah. No, I was just sort of putting it out there.
Okay.
We'll find out what the electorate at large thinks.
What the general electorate feels.
Yes.
Right.
Get it?
Yes.
All right.
The general electorate.
Electric.
Very good.
Electric. We bring good things to life.
And they're sparked, ready to vote.
I can tell this is going to be a charged conversation.
There you go. They're not letting us down, Ray.
High-voltage voting.
And welcome. And let me introduce the panel to you. They've already been wise and witty, so why not introduce you to
let you know who we are.
That's right. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Yo, Joe.
WAMC newsman Ray Graff is here.
Good morning.
Good morning. And political consultant Libby Post is here as well.
Yo,
good
Joe, morning. Too. You took my line. That's okay.
You weren't going to say it.
Yes, I was.
No, you weren't.
Yes, I was.
Oh, God, can we start this again?
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Good morning and welcome. Let us start. As I mentioned, the midterm elections take place tomorrow. And we talked a lot about this on Friday, but let's just real quick go over what we know as of right now. New polls that came out yesterday show Republican Senate candidates surging ahead in key states, including one in Iowa that looked particularly grim for Democrats, giving the GOP a jolt of enthusiasm going into the 2014 campaign cycle's final hours. With just a day from the midterm elections, Washington's political class was buzzing about news. That Iowa's GOP Senate hopeful Joni Ernst was 7 percentage points up in a Des Moines Register poll, and Republican candidates and surrogates popped up on the Sunday news shows gleeful about their prospects. Alan, you have been saying this for a long time.
Yeah, well, it should come as no shock. Look, the president is, I believe, unfairly unpopular, but unpopular he is. I think if the Democrats could be sort of charged with anything, any political crime, it would be letting the Republicans grab the narrative, which they have, and they've done so very successfully.
What's the narrative?
The narrative, meaning Obama's, Obama's bad.
Yeah.
And we're good.
And anything he does is bad, and anything anybody else who likes him does is bad.
Right. That's right.
No, I just wondered what the narrative
was.
My
mother would say, why do you ask?
Interesting that so many Democrats are running from the president. Are they buying into that narrative?
You mean the Democrats?
Yeah.
Well, you know, the chicken and the egg. I mean, let's face it. What happens in a case like this is the narrative is put out there. It's successful. The Democrats don't counter it or counter it successfully. And then as a result, you're running for a political office. And you see that? Do you want the guy, you know, who is taking the brunt of it to be standing next to you? Now, I think there is something to be said for the courage of those who do. Because, you know, I remember a guy down in the Hudson Valley, during the Clinton thing, he said he was not going to endorse Clinton. He was a Democrat. So he ran away from Clinton, and he lost.
Mm-hmm.
And he lost.
I think there's more to be said for the cowardice of those who do not.
That's what I'm saying.
And right. If you are with the president philosophically and you are unwilling to say it publicly, then what kind of a leader does that make you?
The other part of this is that running away from Obama in certain states means leaving the black and Hispanic vote at home.
That's right.
And that's really going to hurt. That will hurt in Georgia. It'll hurt in Louisiana. These are the places where there's large Hispanic, especially black vote, and they should have brought Obama down, and there should have been a concerted strategy around turning those folks out to vote. You know, I read this morning, we've got the ground game, you know, turn them out.
Well, they want it both ways.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, the fact of the matter is it'll all come out on Tuesday, and I'm not feeling very hopeful, to be quite honest.
And don't think that there isn't a certain amount of insult, as you imply, in this, you know. Okay, we'll meet you in the churches, we'll meet you in the supermarkets.
Right, but that's it.
But shh, don't talk about it because that will turn white voters off.
That's right.
We don't want that. It's nonsense, of course.
Yes.
You either have to have a full game or not.
Because whatever white voters you're going to turn off, they're not going to vote for you anyway.
Well, some of them won't.
Right. Well, I think the majority of them won't.
Was I on the panel on Friday? I think I was on Friday.
Yeah, sure.
Did we talk about the letters or messages to Democratic voters in New York and other states that said, well, we notice you haven't voted in the past two midterms. We'll be keeping an eye on this, and if you don't vote, we're going to try to find out why.
Well, actually, the New York version of that came out of the Cuomo campaign, and all the Cuomo people are pointing at each other saying, I didn't do it, he did it, or somebody else did it. And of course, the issue was that they were saying exactly that, Ray. We don't know how you vote, but we'll be able to tell if you voted. And if you didn't vote, woe be you.
That's a little big brother.
There was a threat there.
Yeah.
And it was a stupid thing to do, mm-hmm. and everybody's running away from it.
It's funny. The sort of the justification is, well, this is being done all over the place, and it's very successful. But how do you feel about that?
Personally?
Yeah.
I feel terrible. I mean, I think it's an awful technique. I think as soon as you start to threaten people, they're going to be...
It wasn't really a threat.
Well, it was an implied threat. It was an implied threat.
You know, we all know who votes and who doesn't vote because we can all get that information off the voter files. But to use that so blatantly smacks of Big Brotherism and smacks of 1984. Not the year. And so they have to be very careful about doing that. You know,
Why would you do it? Because
they want a big turnout and they're afraid of not breaking 60%. That's why.
Do you really think it's possible that Andrew Cuomo would not break 60% in this election?
Why is that an important number?
Well, because his father got 64% in this, and the general
mandate,
the general sense of it is that he's running against his father's record. Whether that's fair or not, I don't know. But I keep reading it again and again and again.
Yeah, but what sign? I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just asking what signs are there that you know that is true and not something that the media is hyped up.
Beats me.
Okay. No, I'm just because.
No.
I mean, it seems like a media story, like that we might want to think that, and something that he's necessarily moving in that direction.
No, I think that's.
I don't know so much that he's running against his father's agenda. I think he's running against his own agenda. On one hand, saying he's the progressive candidate, and then on the other hand, coming out and saying he wants to break the stranglehold of public schools.
Well, yeah, that was not the smartest move in the whole world, because if he was going to get a single teacher vote. Mm-hmm. You know, before that, mm-hmm. I'm not so sure he's going to get it now.
Right.
But I think it also this business gets very complicated. I have a very good friend, and I said to him the other day, he voted in advance, and I said, "Can I ask who you voted for?" And he said, "I voted for the governor. I was lukewarm about it, but I did it on the Working Families Party mm-hmm. just to show him." Well, wait a second now. There are others who are voting just to show them on the Howie Hawkins Green Party. And so there's this very interesting dynamic mm-hmm. going on mm-hmm. in which people have all kinds of rationales for how they're going to show them.
I got all this mail from Working Families Party, which was well done, with de Blasio saying, please vote for the governor on the Working Families Party line in order to maintain their ballot position. I mean, that's the Sub Rosa reasoning here.
Right.
Yet he says he's voting on the Democratic line.
De Blasio
when he goes to vote.
Well, de Blasio, I have to tell you, it's been very strange. This has been explained by better minds than mine, saying he's just scared of the governor because the governor has so much power. The city is a creature of the state. We all know that.
Mm-hmm.
And the governor has so much power that de Blasio absolutely has to have him. But, you know, I think Cuomo has smacked de Blasio up the side of his head on a number of occasions. If de Blasio wants to maintain his image as the progressive in the group, I think at some point he has to hit back.
Yeah. And de Blasio is the one who brokered the deal for the governor to get the Working Families Party endorsement to begin with.
And then
the governor then promised to work very, very hard to put the state Senate firmly in the hands of the Democrats, and that hasn't happened.
No, it has not happened.
So what's the end game for de Blasio? Do you see down the road de Blasio saying, well, New York City is not enough. I want the governorship?
Well, sure. I think that's a possibility. But I think in order to do that or any other advancement, he has to maintain his reputation as the progressive.
Right. Absolutely.
Will progressives win upstate?
It depends.
In some urban areas, they would.
Look at
Albany. Yeah.
You know, I have this sense of things. I know, Ray, it's a very good provocative question. But I have this sense of things that in order for any candidate, right or left, to win, a Reagan on the one hand, Jerry Brown on the other, on the other hand, you got to say, go get out there and say, if you elect me, then I'm going to do things to change things around here. I think it's a big challenge for Hillary, to be honest with you, because, you know, she has to show that spark. Everybody thought it about Obama when he was running because they were all projecting their own thoughts into the Obama candidacy. If Hillary's going to be the same old, she won't win. She won't win. She's got to get out there and say, these are the things that we have to do, and I can do it. If de Blasio, even as somebody from the near left, doesn't say, I can make things happen here that aren't happening, he won't win either.
I started off in talking about Iowa. Iowa seems to be the linchpin as far as the some of the Senate, of the GOP Senate. They're looking at this as the key race. And so 7 percentage points seems sizable.
Yes. If I was not leading by seven, if I was losing by 7 percentage points the day before the election, I would be very worried.
Yeah.
There are two southern seats that are sort of up for grabs. Louisiana is one of them. And what's the other one?
Georgia.
Georgia. Yeah. Even though the Democrat is losing, I think, in each case by a couple of points, according to the polls, there is the threat of runoffs, and that will probably be the way in which the control of the United States Senate is determined.
So December or January would be...
Yeah, we'll really know what's going on.
Interesting.
And then, of course, McConnell seems relatively... seems safe in Kentucky.
It would seem so.
Yeah. Let's take a break. We'll come back and talk more and get to a few of the letters that we have on this subject. We welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after the short break.
Support comes from William H. Buckley Farm, Ballston Lake, New York, offering natural, grass-fed, non-GMO beef, pork, poultry, and eggs. Cafe open Wednesday through Sunday, serving breakfast and lunch. BuckleyFarm.com. Williamstown Film Festival, November 5th through 9th. Movies, parties, and guest artists including Lily Taylor, Nick Flynn, and the Bourne Legacy's Tony Gilroy. WilliamstownFilmFest.com for schedule and tickets. And Lennox Plastic Surgery and Skin Center of BMC. Plastic, reconstructive, and hand surgery, and laser skin treatments by Dr. Rodrigo Santa Marina. BerkshireHealthSystems.org.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. We have a letter or two. We want to get to that. All right, we have a letter. And then we welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. And then we'll move on to other topics, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll move on to even more topics after that, if that's that sounds like the game plan.
Oh, boy. Ryan says, I blame the Democrats for their demise. By allowing the conservatives to move the conversation to the right, they have alienated their base. And because they got to the center right after the Republicans, they come off as insincere and don't win independents. I'm tired of the lukewarm corporate progressivism of the Democrats.
What could you have done? How do you stop the conservatives? I mean, taking that at face value of what Ryan was just saying, what should they have done then?
Well, you obviously have to make a to make an argument that is believable and likable, by saying okay, by being timid, and I think Ryan makes the point, by being timid and letting them say anything they want and not countering it with a powerful argument. Mm-hmm. Look, not countering it to say, for example, the middle class is getting screwed. If you don't say it, if you don't make an argument to show that it is indeed what is happening, which it is, you lose. You basically cede to the other guy.
I would posit that Joe's question, hypothetical question, how would you stop the conservatives, yes, doesn't really apply. How many conservatives are actually in? You ask a libertarian how many conservatives are actually in Congress, and they'll say not too many.
Well, Raymond, yeah, I couldn't disagree with you more.
Really? Come on.
I couldn't disagree with you more. I mean, look.
They're all tax and spend.
They are not all tax and spend. They are.
Have you seen the budgets?
Well, by the way, we're doing much better now, as we did under Clinton.
Gee, it's amazing, isn't it? Isn't it just astounding how that works?
So here you get, you know, Ray making this point that it's all tax and spend. Have you seen the budgets lately? We're doing extremely well. Clinton left office with a balanced budget.
Right.
And when the Republicans came in, they ran it up.
And look, so, the market closed over 17,000 last week. I mean, economically, we're doing better.
Careful about using that as a benchmark. Because Clinton, the economy was gangbusters leading up to a huge bubble burst.
There's always a bubble. There's always those kinds of things. But our budget, the federal budget, is much better under control. Jobs are being created. He's done a very good job. Hindsight will be 2020 here. And when the historians look back on the Obama 8 years, they'll find that he was a very, very good president. You know, the fact is that they're not strong, and I'm not sure why, in the message department. You know, maybe it's because Axelrod's not there anymore. I'm not sure, but they've created these message voids and left vacuums and let the Republicans fill them, and that's been the biggest problem. They've been weak on some of the issues.
We have to take a break.
Whoops.
We will be back. You're perfect.
You're fine.
You're the ship right in on time. Don't worry about anything.
Player coach.
Don't
without,
hit the dock.
Without hitting the dock.
Yeah. We welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll continue our conversation and talk more about many other issues in just a moment. Libby is here. Ray is here. Alan is here. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after the short break.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Dave Mattingly. It'll be some time before federal investigators know for sure what caused Friday's crash of Virgin Galactic's experimental spacecraft. It went down in California's Mojave Desert. But officials say what they do know is the device used to slow the craft deployed too soon during the test flight. The man behind the project, billionaire Richard Branson, is dismissing claims that safety was ignored.
When you have any incidents, you get a lot of self-proclaimed experts coming out, a lot of whom know nothing about what they're talking about.
That's Branson speaking to the BBC. The National Transportation Safety Board says the spacecraft's engine and fuel tanks were recovered and there were no signs of an explosion. The co-pilot was killed. The pilot remains hospitalized with serious injuries. In Pakistan, the death toll is up to 57 after a suicide bombing near the border with India. NPR's Philip Reeves says yesterday's attack took place near the city of Lahore.
Pakistan's authorities have sent a defiant message to whoever was behind the bombing. One day after the attack, the world-famous military parade held every evening at the Wagah border crossing went ahead as usual. It was an emotional occasion that officials had initially said would be cancelled because of the tragedy. Hundreds of Pakistanis cheered and clapped as the flags on both sides were ceremoniously lowered. Few people were visible on the other side in India, where the government strongly condemned the bombing. Pakistan's security agencies are trying to find out who sent the bomber, who attacked a crowd as it was leaving the same ceremony yesterday. Philip Reeves, NPR News, Islamabad.
The U.S. Supreme Court hears arguments today in a case asking whether Congress can override the president's power on matters of foreign policy involving U.S. passports. Here's NPR's Nina Totenberg.
Ever since the founding of Israel in 1948, the U.S. has taken the position that no country has sovereignty over Jerusalem until its status is negotiated in a Middle East peace deal. Israel's supporters in Congress, however, have tried to force a different policy, seeking to move the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem and requiring the State Department to allow U.S. citizens born in Jerusalem to list Israel as their place of birth on their passports instead of just Jerusalem. The Bush administration and the Obama administration both refused to do that, contending that the passport law unconstitutionally infringes on the president's foreign policy power. Now the Supreme Court will decide. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
This is a busy day for political candidates across the U.S., the last full day of campaigning ahead of Tuesday's midterm elections. Republicans are hoping to win back control of the U.S. Senate, along with more governor's mansions, including races in Texas and Wisconsin. This is NPR News. The New York skyscraper, known as One World Trade Center, officially opens for business today. NPR's Joel Rose says the building's first tenant is publisher Condé Nast.
One World Trade Center rises some 1,776 feet above the site of the September 11th Memorial and Museum in Lower Manhattan. It's considered the tallest skyscraper in the Western Hemisphere. It's also the most expensive, with a price tag of nearly $4 billion. Condé Nast will occupy about a third of One World Trade Center, but the developers have had trouble luring other tenants away from Midtown. More than 40% of the building has yet to be rented. The original twin towers of the World Trade Center also had trouble attracting tenants when they opened in the early 1970s. The observation deck of One World Trade Center is slated to open next year with a price tag of $32 per ticket. Joel Rose, NPR News, New York.
It's the first week of November, and already parts of New England are digging out from heavy snow. Brian Hurley is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service. He says Maine saw a lot of snow over the weekend.
To the order of a foot, or in some cases close to 2 feet. Over Cary, Maine, for example, had 21 inches. But Bangor, Maine, 14.5 inches. Caribou, far northern Maine, had 9.5 inches. So quite a bit of snow, early season snowfall for northern New England, certainly.
Areas of the Smoky Mountains in North Carolina and Tennessee also saw heavy snow. A weekend apartment house fire in Maine is being called the state's deadliest in 30 years. 5 people died when flames engulfed the building near the University of Southern Maine in Portland. The state's fire marshal says most of those living in the building were college students. I'm Dave Mattingly in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Cancer Treatment Centers of America, offering genomic testing that may reveal other treatment options for individual cancer patients at cancercenter.com.
Support comes from Unusual Wedding Rings and More in Crawford Square, North Street, downtown Pittsfield, featuring a variety of jewelry specializing in repair, remodeling, and recycling. 413-236-9300. Curran Compliance Services, hosting a national symposium on life insurance compliance November 12th through the 14th in Saratoga Springs, featuring keynote speaker Cynthia Cooper, whistleblower at WorldCom, currancompliance.com. And Oakwood Friends School, Poughkeepsie, New York, an independent college preparatory boarding and day school for grades 6 through 12, focusing on the individual learner, oakwoodfriends.org. Support comes from The Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butter scratch bakery, caterer, and cafe, offering fair trade coffee, blacksheepdeli.com. Interim Healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day, so you or a loved one can stay in your home, supporting the Mohawk Hudson Land Conservancy, interimhealthcare.com. And Ye Olde Warwick Bookshop, Warwick, New York, a Hudson River Valley bookseller specializing in new and vintage books, plus collectibles and curiosities. Open 7 days a week, yeoldwarwickbookshop.com.
Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and to our roundtable panel for this Monday morning, the 3rd of November. Alan Chartok is here. Ray Graff is here. Libby Post, I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. mandatory clearing of the
throat. You got a cough button, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah,
feel
but
free.
I can't. It's so far.
Yeah, I know.
It's so much of a reach.
So oh,
And by the way, I just want to, what we were talking about midterm elections, we're going to read some letters about the midterms, but I want to remind people that, of course, NPR will have coverage and WAMC's coverage of the results for tomorrow night will begin at 9 o'clock.
Yeah. And you'll be anchoring, right?
You and me, buddy.
Well, you'll be anchoring. I'll be sitting here half asleep.
Okay. Oh, nice. We'll all be here for that. That's going to be fun.
Yeah. I love that. It's Alan and I get to talk, and just it's fun. We watch the TV, and it's very cool. And obviously share what we know. Brian Shields will be providing results. All of our reporters will be out in the field. Ian will be doing a great job. You know, bringing everybody together. So it'll be good. So tomorrow from 9 to 11.
I think the first newscast may be 8:30, 8:38, something like that.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think you're right. And then we'll be doing the and then of course NPR will be covering it throughout the evening.
Oh, they do that as well.
Yes, absolutely. So, if all's going
they
well.
They do something else.
If the wind is correct, we'll have some coverage.
We have great faith in them.
Yes.
And anyway, let us get to some letters, Alan.
Okay. So, Sid says, per Libby, I wish the better budget numbers were, in capital letters, attributable to an Obama policy. Regrettably, it's more a matter of the sequester. Well, whatever it is, Sid, I got to tell you, same thing with Bill Clinton. It ended up on the right side, and you had a president. You can't say to the president, you don't get credit because somebody else was sitting at the table with you. At least I don't think you can. All right. And that takes us to Lester, who says, most of the polls are within the range of error. Why do most of the pundits say it will be a Republican sweep? If they win, the party of no wins out. If the Dems keep the Senate, it's the end of talking heads. Thanks,
well,
Lester.
Talking heads will still be there the next day,
right,
regardless.
And the latest Quinnipiac poll shows Iowa in a dead heat between Braley and Ernst at 47-47.
Wow.
And if we keep Iowa.
Who's we?
The Democrats.
The
sorry.
I'm on enrollment.
Kemosabe. Yes, the Democrats.
You. Kemosabe.
You know, that's one of the swing states that they're looking at.
Okay. So that's from Lester and from Jill. Why don't Democrats? Whoa.
It's a long letter, Jill. I'm warning you.
I'm warning you, too.
There's a high margin for error in this.
We'll stop when we can. Why don't Democrats understand how important congressional elections are? The president is unpopular because he hasn't done everything he said he'd do. Well, we have mostly Congress to thank for that. Why don't Dems understand that if Republicans get the Senate too, Obama will be able to do even less? Democrats are not voting tomorrow because they're mad at the president is like very counterproductive. Why don't they see how important it is for them to vote for their candidate and on? But that's where we're stopping with that too long letter.
Okay.
And then over to Michael. The problem with Democrats is the problem with all politicians. They use focus groups and other PR strategies to carefully craft the content of their speeches towards the goal of winning elections and not solving problems. The applause is coming from Raymond.
Well done. Well said.
Yeah, right.
Maybe.
What's wrong with that? In other words, having convictions and proceeding with those convictions and not focus groups. Absolutely.
Kenner says, the Republican narrative is, government stinks, so vote for me. I will make the government run better because I hate government. How much skepticism of government is sensible? 2014 edition, Advantage Republican tomorrow. And Jerome says, we don't need change, we need improvement. That's what I got.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
That seems very good.
Oh, is there something else that came in at the top?
Yes, I think there's one from John.
All right.
From John.
Did you get one from John?
Or and maybe Jen?
And John.
Okay. Under Obama, the DJ...
Dow Jones Industrial Average.
Okay. The Dow Jones Industrial Average has more than doubled, unemployment has decreased dramatically, and corporations are showing record profits. Unfortunately, mean per capita income, at least, has been flat since 2008. That's why he is unpopular. Thanks, John. And from Jen. I read an article in Forbes magazine stating that Obama is the best modern president for the economy. The article compares him at this point in his term to Reagan. Obama's administration is doing markedly better. The issue is that the Democrats don't shout their successes louder than the Republicans, parenthesis Ray, assertion that they are ruining the country. What happens then in a Republican-led Senate to the Democrats? Will they continue to let the Republicans steamroll them? And thanks from Jennifer.
We thank you very much for your letters. By the way, we just want to remind you we had a vote on Friday, and we're asking for 140 characters.
Well, that's
a good point.
You can only tweet to us.
When you write, no, you can write to us, but just 140 characters in your emails.
About how many lines would 140 characters?
Like three lines.
Yeah, and that's great.
So you're asking people to just tweet.
Well, we don't want to say tweet because we don't want to, just on Twitter, we want them to email them, but we want to use the Twitter rule of 140
characters. In other words, we don't want footnotes and references.
Keep it short, folks.
Right.
Yeah.
And certainly we don't want it coming around for a second time.
That's right. I love the links, too. Those are great.
Links
in the email.
The links in the email where they want you to read the entire...
Oh, yeah. We don't do that. We never read those.
But don't get us wrong, folks. Report. We really do want you to email. It doesn't sound that way, but we really do. Right, Joe?
Yes, okay. Ray. Absolutely. Right.
We do want
to
hear from you.
Boy, I'll tell you.
Here we go. Okay. Let's go on the UN panel on climate change. I found this fascinating. The gathering risks of climate change are so profound that they could stall or even reverse generations of progress against poverty and hunger if greenhouse emissions continue at a runaway pace, according to a major new UN report. Despite growing efforts in many countries to tackle the problem, the global situation is becoming more acute as developing countries join the West in burning huge amounts of fossil fuels, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change said in Copenhagen on Sunday.
This is greed over green. These companies, the big oil companies, the fossil fuel companies, they care about the short term of making money, making their investors happy, and that's it.
But
and
don't they have grandchildren?
One would think they do, but I think these people think they're in a bubble and this isn't real and they don't really have to pay attention to it.
I can't believe that.
I don't get it. I just don't get where people are coming from.
They're very smart. These people have Wharton degrees and Harvard degrees and other
in
things.
In business, you know, not in environmental science.
But it doesn't matter. The point is... that they're putting their heads in the sand and they're letting their... Look,
I
have a grandson.
Darker,
it's just so scary, that what this kid is...
You looks pretty handsome.
You have five children, Raymond, and you worry about them and their children, don't you?
I sure do.
Yeah, I do too.
And you believe in... And Ray, and you believe that this is a horrendous situation, don't you?
Well, I believe Ban Ki-moon should be leaning on China and India heavily.
Wait. The second worst in the world is us.
And we're working on it.
Not enough. When you have ExxonMobil and the big companies, you know, doing what they're doing, not curtailing greenhouse gases.
You can't even get us to the major conferences to discuss.
And then you have a Senate and a Congress
that won't sign
a treaty.
So give me
a break. Right.
Yeah.
Right. One would think that these people would be smarter because what is the history going to be or the future going to be for their grandchildren and great-grandchildren? But they're really more concerned with their pocketbook.
So it's hard for me. I'm sorry. It's hard for me not to be to be cynical in this. But so I try not to be in asking this question. But if we're at a point now where the UN, this UN panel comes out and says, OK, look, this is bad for humankind.
This is the worst ever.
We come out just last week from the Pentagon report saying that this is a national security issue, which to me, and this is where the cynicism comes in, like, which is all stuff that I think we should have figured out like 15, 20 years ago. But anyway, so if we don't and we're just coming to this now, is this going to change anything or are we still going to be spinning our wheels saying how bad it is and not doing anything to change it?
Mm. Well, I think what's going to happen is Pat Robertson's going to get up on his show and say, God,
I'm not sure
he can
get up anymore.
Right, I know. But
is he alive?
Yes, he is.
Okay.
But he's going to say God's punishing us for supporting same-sex marriage. You know, I mean, and some of these people don't believe the science. You know, Sarah Palin doesn't believe the science. People, you know, they just think that science is not something that they have to pay attention to. So as much as we'd like for something like this to be the starting point or the breaking point and people actually start paying attention and doing something about it, you know, it's greed over green.
Look, this is just horrible.
Yep.
It's horrible. It's stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a total disregard for what we owe to our children and our mm-hmm. grandchildren.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll go to other issues, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org, 140 characters or less, please.
Yeah.
Void in New Jersey.
Or a couple
after this.
Support comes from Twillez, Ford, Gold, Butler, and Monroe, LLP, a New York law firm representing physicians and healthcare professionals for over 100 years. NYMedDefense.com. Field Goods, providing year-round deliveries of produce from local farms for pickups at workplaces or community sites and offering workplace wellness options, field-goods.com. And Skidmore College Master's Program, part-time graduate study customized according to individual student objectives, available at a distance, MALS at skidmore.edu.
Good morning, and welcome to the roundtable panel. And we've been having a very spirited discussion, which that music kind of soothes us.
Yes.
Yeah, it calms us down.
Really?
Gets us into a nice
very
mode.
Mellow.
Don't you agree, Ray?
I suppose.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
Yeah. I'm pretty mellow to begin with. So
you are mellow today.
Yeah.
You're very. Yeah.
I don't think he's so mellow.
You know what?
I like him. He's
don't take tone with me, Shartok.
Take a tone, you mean?
Yeah.
Don't take a tone with me, you mean? That's what you're saying. Don't take a tone with me.
All right.
How about you take a letter with me?
Okay, here we go. let's see. Unfortunately, I believe that the climate change debate is polarized because it was championed by Al Gore. Because of that, no Republican can agree with him based on the politics alone. All right. And then Horsecat says... are my emails going into the bit bucket? At least you aren't discussing proposals. Okay, Horsecat, listen, man, Karen DeWitt is going to have a major story today on the proposals. Is that what I hear?
Yeah, I think she's going to do a recap. I saw the email this morning
yeah.
Just to recap what those ballot initiatives
and
are.
And if we did, we'd have to do it in Massachusetts and here and everything else.
Right, you are, Alan. Good point.
And then Stephen says, I think you will be amazed at the low level of support from upstate New York progressives for Cuomo. Every Democrat I know is voting for Hawkins, and that's from Steve.
Are all Democrats progressives?
No.
No.
Okay.
Oh, no.
And are all progressives Democrats? No to that, too.
No. Right.
And that's okay, right?
That's what makes diversity.
It's all okay, right?
Okay.
It keeps the gene pool, you know, mixed up really
varied.
Well. Varied, right.
And Mike says, it's not because of who is and who is not in office that gay marriage is moving forward. It wasn't those in office that won civil rights victories or workers' rights. It was people's movements. Government is a farce. People make change and government responds when it is forever to do so.
Mm-hmm.
When it is what does that forever, mean, when it is forever, it to, is do? Forever to do? That might be one of those autocorrect things where it's not the correct word. But we get the point.
It's very Shakespearean.
Yeah, when it is not, forsooth, it is not forever to do,
to do so.
Yeah, yeah.
Jan Cuomo has now a lean protest. And hungry look. Such men are dangerous.
Let me put it this way. If it weren't for Lyndon Johnson and the civil rights, the Voting Rights Act and the rest, there's room for everybody in this boat. Both the people out on the streets and the people who are responding to
mm-hmm.
it.
Right.
All right, we're good?
Yeah.
Is that everything?
I suppose.
Okay. So let's go on to, I suppose, let's go on to Common Core and interesting article in the Washington Post. This is about the math, which can, and Ray, hopefully you'll be able to help us with this.
All right, talk to me.
Common Core math can be a mystery, and parents are going to school to understand it. So the parents who are frustrated, most U.S. public schools are learning math very differently than their parents did due to Common Core state standards, national K-12 math and reading benchmarks that have been adopted by 43 states. And the District of Columbia. The changes have confused many parents, particularly at the elementary level, leaving them flustered by a basic parental duty helping with the homework.
Yeah.
That's right, Joe. And it was 1960, was it Tom Lehrer, 1967?
Yes.
In which he wrote
The New Math.
The New Math.
Right. Tom Lehrer.
Right.
Yes, Tom Lehrer, The New Math. And if we have, and I know our Cracker Jack people out there might even find it so we could play it out with
right
that.
Now?
The New Math. You
There's
never
no
know.
Way they're gonna
you
get
know,
that.
When I went to school, when I came home with my homework in 1968, 69, it was The New Math at Tom Lehrer. And my parents were befuddled.
Of course.
Because I was doing short division, they were doing long division, they couldn't help me. And then, of course, once we got to f of x, I was done in algebra. That was the end of my math career. But, I get where they're coming from. They want kids to be able to think and solve problems and be more. But one of the...
Some of you who have small children may have
he's playing
been
it.
Put in the embarrassing position.
Well, how much time do we have?
We got a conversation going here.
Yeah, we did.
Right.
Okay, but
okay.
Maybe we can hear just a little of this.
Okay.
Service here tonight, I thought I would offer a brief lesson in the new math tonight. We're going to cover subtraction. This is the first room I've worked for a while. It didn't have a blackboard, so we will have to make do with more primitive visual aids, as they say in the ad biz. Consider the following subtraction problem, which I will put up here. 342 minus 173. Now, remember how we used to do that. 3 from 2 is 9, carry the 1. And if you're under 35 or went to a private school, you say 7 from 3 is 6. But if you're over 35 and went to a public school, you say 8 from 4 is 6.
Well, I think you get the point. There we go. Yeah. There you go.
The basic idea, though, of the Common Core was a good one, I think, in that the standards vary from state to state. So let's have something that provides a more unified end result. However, I must confess to being perplexed when I try to help the kids do their math homework.
Here we go. Some in Michigan, they did a school hosted a Common Core math night for families at a local Kroger's. Children and adults were given everyday challenges requiring math operations, such as figuring how many boxes of pasta to buy for a family of six if each box contains 4 servings.
Hmm. When a train was coming down the track at 50 miles an hour and 70 miles an hour.
So it's two servings, and you're going to have two boxes. You're going to have 2 servings left over.
Well, what if they want more?
Well, that's the problem. So you do 3 boxes, and everybody can have 2 servings.
Yeah.
Well, put another way, I couldn't do it when I was at PS 75, and I can't do it now.
Old math, new math, he doesn't care. Right. He can't do it.
But I like this idea of putting the parents on the same page as the kids of knowing so they can help.
But
meaning, is it too hard then?
I see what they're trying to do. In other words, in the old days, we did stuff via memorization.
Do you remember Chisholm Bop?
Not at all. But I hope you don't say it again because it's a little disconcerting.
Do you remember Chisholm Bop?
No.
Chisholm Bop was it like one of the first telecommercials? What do they call it?
Infomercials.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
And they had this thing. It was a new way of doing math, and you like play with your fingers, and you could come up with these complex mathematical things, and it was a tool, and they called it Chisholm Bop, and they like started to adopt it in the schools. Go ahead, Ray.
Here's the thing, Chisholm Bop aside, what they want to do, like what we would learn multiplication tables by memory. We would know this, and we could do the math. Most of us, those who are not in radio, obviously could do the math. but what they're trying to get the kids to do is to go beyond that and think about why and the construction and the mental processes of actually understanding what they're doing. Now, the problem is there are these word, you have to do a word sentence or a word problem, and they're often much more difficult than saying 7 times 6 is 42.
I remember learning from the after-school specials. Remember those?
Yes.
And all the songs that came out of that. But, you know, the thing is, I want to make sure that ultimately, my ultimate truth, that 1 + 1 = 2, is going to be maintained.
Okay.
I'm not so sure.
That's the problem.
That's why we're on the radio today.
Right.
Hey, we don't know. IR in radio.
Suddenly he sounds but all like people, Tennessee Tuxedo.
Right. I don't know how that happened. All the people in the control room have to know math because they have to know how all that engineering stuff works.
That's true. Hopper, are you pretty smart?
More or less.
Yeah. I know this stuff.
This, I know.
He knows when to kill the mics. About a minute, Hopper. About a minute.
And there are 11 different things. We can't read them all, but you can go to WMC.org and
check them out.
And check out. And the thing about the new math is we need to know how to count up to 140 characters.
You brought it full circle.
Thank you.
Well done, Libby.
All right. We're good. I want to thank everybody for joining us this morning. Okay. And thank you very much for taking part in our discussion. Again, a reminder, we will have full election coverage tomorrow night. Polls close at 9 o'clock. And at least in New York, and then other times in other states, and we'll be covering all of that.
And it's going to be really dark when you go to vote.
Absolutely.
Because we turn the clocks back or whatever.
Thank you, Libby.
You're welcome.
Libby Post, Ray Graff, Alan Chartok, thank you very much. We'll be back and continue the roundtable after this.